Coming to you live from Kodiak Island, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always are bears, but not the kind you're thinking of. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 2D2. Be careful when Googling that one.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And today we're talking about engine building.
Yeah.
I was going to say something funny there, but I prepared nothing.
Well, we're going to talk about engine building.
Which isn't funny.
I prefer to start with the pistons myself. I think that's really the heart of the engine, and you want to build around that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pistons is the heart of the engine?
Yeah.
Okay. For a second, I thought you meant the basketball team, and I was very confused.
Did you know they're not actually named after automobile pistons? You would think so, since they're from Detroit. But I don't know of another thing that the word piston means, so I don't have anywhere to go with this joke.
It's like a really good, like an auspicious beginning to this episode.
It's going
to
be amazing. Where, yeah. It's really just, it's all uphill from here.
Just auspices all up in.
They are spicy. Auspice.
Wow. Yeah, that was just, maybe we should stop.
I wonder if the word auspice comes from spice, which was valuable back in the day, and AU, which is the Latin abbreviation for gold.
Yeah.
Aurum. So, I wonder if that you just combine those to get auspices, which are good things, you know, golden spices. It's like putting some pepper on a doubloon.
So, by the... wow. Idiot.
I really enjoyed just now watching you think I should just move on. I should just carry on with the podcast. I cannot let that go unremarked. Just watching it play out on your face was a lot of fun.
You're so dumb. So by that same etymology, would not hospice be like hoe spices?
Yeah, yeah. Like a garden implement that's used to dig up the pepper.
Right. That didn't even make sense. What are we talking about? Engine building.
I thought we were talking about spice.
Well, yeah. What are we supposed to be talking about?
I lost track long ago.
Yeah. Engine building. What's engine building in terms of game?
In terms of game mechanics, engine building is when you start out with at the beginning of the game with nothing or a small amount of thing. And over the course of the game, you collect resources, abilities, powers, which taken together allow you to gradually convert resources from one type to another, and ultimately into victory in the game. So, for example, in, what's the word I want here?
Dominion?
Dominion is one.
Okay.
You're building up some way of, some group of cards in your deck that interact together to turn whatever's in your hand into money, money into more cards into victory points, ultimately. So that's one. Another good example is the game Splendor, which is about having the most victory points, more or less, but it's a gem game. You're collecting gems to do gem stuff with.
Is any of them a knife gem?
No, they're all just regular.
Okay, then we can keep working on our our Exploding Kittens reskin.
But in that one, there are four different colors of gems, and as you buy, you know, different gem mines and gem cutters and whatnot, mm-hmm. they provide you with free access to that color, which lets you buy more stuff over it. So you might buy a guy that gives you one free red gem every round, and then that lets you buy more red gems, which then lets you buy other stuff, and you know, and so you can work your way you work your way up the ladder of more and more effective cards that way. So that's kind of what I mean by an engine. It's a set of tools or abilities that you build over the course of the game and that improves, that lets you convert resources from one to another, stuff that you have from one form to another, and ultimately, theoretically, helps you win the board game.
Okay, so can you explain that in a way that makes it sound interesting?
No.
See, okay, that's fine. Okay.
I guess, but it does pop up in games that you like.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
So, I guess what I'm wondering is it a concept that's so basic to board gaming that it's basically you're going to find an example of it in every game? And B, I didn't think I gave the first one a number. We'll retroactively call it A. And B,
you said number.
How critical is it? Like, how critical is that kind of a function of being able to build your own thing up and have it be your thing that you made and work with it? What do you think about that?
Well, I think if you, we'll just keep unapologetically stealing from Uwe. As far as that idea of the dopamine cycle goes, engine building is a really good way to accomplish that because you're building towards something that can sort of go off is the best phrase I can think of to explain it. They can like eventually build to something big that happens that is very gratifying when your engine reaches the point where it achieves its function, right? Mm-hmm. And so as a mechanic, I think that is good. I certainly know of those turns in Dominion where you finally hit the point where you've got just the right balance of cards in your deck. And so your turns are really going the way you want, where you work all the way through it and get a bunch of stuff done and buy a bunch of victory points or whatever. And it works really well for you. I think there may be a problem with the idea of, oh, well, that's an engine building game. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely a good mechanic. I think maybe too often it is the core mechanic. And it could even be the core mechanic, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but being like, well, it's an engine building game. It's like when someone tells me that's a trick-taking game, I'm like, well, trick-taking isn't an interesting mechanic. Mm-hmm. It's the way the game happens, and that's fine, but saying it's a trick-taking game does not interest me. It just tells me how the game works.
Gotcha.
So you got to do something with it to make it more interesting. Mm-hmm. I think Dominion is pretty raw engine building, and it's fairly engaging, I guess, but I don't always want to go back to playing Dominion either. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely got to have something draped over it. Like, you can see Dominion has a light dusting of theme on top of it, and that kind of gets you invested. Seven Wonders theme is less so, and it's pretty strict. It's pretty hardcore engine building, and it's interested you less than Dominion, I would say. And I find it less interesting than Dominion, too, for that reason. Splendor ran into a similar thing where the gem thing was just an excuse to put colors on the cards,
right.
And the chips and whatnot. Side note on Splendor, it had these really weighty chips to it, like to represent your gems, which were very satisfying to use.
Nice. Are all deck builders engine builders by definition?
I guess yes and no, I would say, because I mean, like with Dominion, you're trying to find cards that interact with each other well and play nice together. But I wouldn't call something like Arctic Scavengers an engine builder so much, because I find in Arctic Scavengers at least that the individual cards that I buy and use on their own tend to do their thing.
Yeah, they don't really work with one another.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, the equipment has to work with one another, and the leaders do to some extent. So there's a little bit of trying to get that synergy going there. But I never or rarely feel like I have a turn where, boom, 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 I play this, and therefore this gets better, and this links it all together to throw a big brick at you.
Mm-hmm.
Or to get me just a bunch of stuff. It always feels like this is an individually good part of my turn, and here's a separate, distinct good part of my turn. I'm glad they both happened, but either one could have happened on their own and been fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that interaction is key to making it a good engine builder. And I think that interaction is satisfying, too, when you can get it working really well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, here's a question. Has an engine builder ever been done or done well without cards? And if not, how would you do that? Could you do that?
Well, I mean, you could do it with tokens or that kind of thing to write. You just need a rule book or a reference to show you what they represented, but they could interact with each other in a way to build more stuff
up. Has it been done in your experience? It's got to be out there. There's so many games.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think of what it would be. It's on the tip of my tongue what that a game that is kind of engine buildery and doesn't use a deck of cards.
I guess in a way, I'm still trying to kind of wrap my brain around what exactly is and isn't an engine builder. I guess Eclipse is an engine builder in a way. Because you got to spend your resources to get more planets and stuff, but then they start drawing resources, but they also give you more resources. So you're kind of building toward a point where your space empire is bringing in more resources than it's expending, but you're still able to do the thing you want. So you can sort of, it's over a much, it's much slower. I mean, there's only, what, six rounds in Eclipse? So you never get to that, like, all right, things are running just exactly the way I want them to every turn, like you do in Dominion. But you do get to a point where if you're doing it well, you feel like, okay, I can finally kind of sit back, not worry so much about acquiring resources and spend my time using those resources that I can now count on having as long as I keep playing my cards right, metaphorically. And start building ships and start going out and attacking aliens or whatever it is that you're doing. So is that real? I mean, it's engine buildery, but I guess there's a point at which you could make an argument for almost any kind of game being an engine builder. I don't know that I don't know if it's just because of my limited experience with those kinds of games or if it's an ill-defined term.
I mean, it's a loose term, like a lot of things in board gaming. But I think Eclipse counts as it's definitely a fringe case, but. A closer strategy game I think that hits it is, I don't think you played this one, was Terra Mystica. Because again, it's got that, you build A so that you can get, you build, you know, your town so you can get this kind of resource, which then lets you build one step up, which lets you get a new kind and convert priests into temples. I don't know how exactly that works, but, you know, you're always shuffling things. I think for me, the thing that kind of defines an engine builder is the conversion of one resource in the game into another, and that as you build it over the course of the game, it lets you do that more directly. I'm trying to think of how that worked in Seven Wonders. I don't remember that game well enough because most of my memories of it are of your scathing review as we went along.
Yeah, that game was not enjoyable except for the ripping into it.
It was impressive.
I might have had a few drinks at that point in the night.
Might. Yeah.
I believe when that game came out, it went something like, Johannes, we know this isn't really your kind of game, but we want to play it. And I said, that's fine, but I'm going to start drinking scotch. Alexa, stop. What did I say that sounded like Alexa?
I didn't hear you say her name at all.
Alexa, stop.
Johannes got one of those Amazon Echoes as a promo recently, and so now if you say the word Alexa in his kitchen at all, she wakes up and starts talking to you.
It turned off, thankfully.
Oh, she's off.
We forgot to mute it this time.
Ah, gotcha. So
I could do that, but at this point, why bother?
Exactly.
Oh, it's not a quality podcast.
It's a terrible podcast. But so I guess the other thing that kind of defines engine building, you know, from where I'm sitting, from my deeply ignorant perspective, is that you tend to improve over the course of the game. Like you don't start with a fully formed, your battle station is not fully armed and operational at the beginning of the game, and you have to gradually make it so, to reference two different sci-fi franchises in one go. Whereas in a game like Arkham, you kind of start out at the peak of your power and it's all downhill from there. I mean, you might get stuff that makes you more powerful over the course of the game, but probably not.
And they're, again, like we talked about with Arctic Scavengers, they're not things that tend to work together to continue growing your power as a player.
Right. It tends to be individual pieces that are good, but aren't part of a unified whole.
Okay.
I guess how much do you like having, you know, your power grow over the course of the game, and that sense of building over the course of the evening, or versus a game more like Space Alert, say, where you're not picking up anything over the course of the game. You're just desperately trying not to have it all fall apart, or just using what you've got from the beginning to juggle things and try to keep it together.
I think it really depends on the game. I think Space Alert was an interesting choice of example there. I don't think engine building would work in that context. And I don't think that game really, when you look at it, hits the, if we're going to go back to the dopamine cycle again, I don't think it really hits that all that much, because that's a game about frantically trying to put your program your turn. And then watch it fall apart around you, or maybe it doesn't.
Yeah. That would be an interesting conversation. How does Space Alert fit into that theory?
Like, I'm sure there's a way to talk your way around it and make it sort of kind of fit.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really fit the mold all that well.
No, but it's good.
But it's still fun and for certain people. And there are other people who hate it. And that's fine. But at the same time, I think it just goes back to what I said earlier, that you can't necessarily always base your game on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fine. I think it is the a driving attractor in Dominion is watching your and figuring out how to make your engine grow to a point where it's functional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of fun. It's very gratifying as you get to those turns where everything is kind of flowing and going mm-hmm. exactly the way you planned it. But that doesn't have to be the way every game goes. If all games worked that way, I wouldn't need to play a lot of games.
I could play a few of them.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's fine when that's the game. And when it's not, I don't really miss it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel like it needs to be in every game. It's just, it's a mechanic. It's a pretty decent mechanic for certain types of game.
So mechanics got to match what you're doing. It's got to make sense in context.
Yeah, I don't know that an engine builder in, like, the Cthulhu mythos would ever make sense, unless mm-hmm. you are the Elder Thing. And even then, it doesn't really make sense, because you should pretty much just be... Unless you're right. building an engine to awaken from your slumber, which doesn't make a ton of sense.
Well, there's that Cthulhu Wars game that came out relatively recently, where you're one of the Ancient Ones, and you've got, like, cultists, and you're trying to beat the
You could make a Cthulhu Mythos engine builder where you are a cultist or you control the group of cultists and mm-hmm. you're trying to set the wheels in motion to awaken the Elder Thing.
That could be kind of a fun game. I'd play it.
So I guess I'm wrong that it doesn't work in the Cthulhu Mythos, but it has to fit the context.
Yeah.
And I find that it is often not put in a context that is all that interesting. I really honestly don't know what it is that got me into Dominion in the first place. Well, it was my brother-in-law mm-hmm. showing it to me. But I don't think that's the sort of game that would have attracted me initially. I think a lot of people have complaints about Dominion not having a particularly interesting or engaging theme.
Mm-hmm.
And they're right. You could strip the theme from Dominion and it would function pretty much identically. But the fact that they went just fantasy enough, you know, there are witches and wizards and mm-hmm. and alchemists and whatever, even though that really doesn't have any bearing on the game, it was more engaging to me than if it were just like a historically accurate
mm-hmm.
game about France or whatever. Like I don't find that interesting all that often. I think historical games tend to turn me off, even if it's a period in history that I find interesting. It tends to be the style of artwork
mm-hmm.
and the things they do with it, but it also tends to be put on very Euro-y or war game-y sure. kinds of games that are not really my bag.
And engine building definitely lends itself well to Euro-y
yeah,
games.
Yeah.
Euro games.
Have you seen any games that use it that are not so Euro other than Dominion, which is, I think, pretty Euro anyway?
What do you call it? That other game that we have, King of Tokyo, is a little bit in that.
A very little bit.
You're gathering those powers and trying to build up your dice pool and your power and all that. A little bit.
A little bit.
And so on. No, nothing off the top of my head that's particularly far from Euro-y at any rate.
Well, do you have anything else to say about engine building before we end your life?
What? I'm sorry, huh? How about a what now?
These were your last words.
Well, crap.
You're heading to the guillotine.
I wish I'd picked better words.
We all do. We had to listen to them.
I know, right? That's a terrible podcast.
Any last words?
Oswald acted alone.
Okay. Well, if you disagree with Tom on that point, you can let us know on Twitter at Mildly Alarming. Oh, yeah. And he doesn't get any more words. You could also email us. at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com. If you wouldn't want to make your last words anything other than that, you could hit us up in the comments at www.mildlyalarming.com, or you could write your comments on a sheet of rice paper and staple them to a dog. I don't know why you would do that, but you could. And when you get arrested for animal abuse, don't blame me. You have free will, I'm pretty sure. So we'll be right back after this word from our sponsor.
Sometimes, when I get home from the grocery store, I have a hard time remembering which bottle goes in the bathroom and which one goes in the kitchen. Well, I used to, before I'd heard of Luster Mustard Shampoo and Sandwich Spread. Luster Mustard combines a zesty yellow mustard with a restorative shampoo to give your burgers a little extra zing and your hair a little extra bounce. No more worrying about which bottle goes where. Just buy two bottles of Luster Mustard and throw one in the bathroom and the other in the kitchen. Or put your fridge in the bathroom. Or just shower in the kitchen. You know, with that little spray hose thing. You can do what you want in life, and Luster Mustard can help. And now you can solve even more of your personal care and hot dog problems with Conditioner Chup Split End Curing Ketchup, Pickly Skin's Exfoliating Relish, and Spongy Bun's Loofah-Style Hot Dog Rolls. Luster Mustard Shampoo and Sandwich Spread. New from Gunchlin.
Beautiful railway bridge of the Silvery Tay. Alas, I am very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. O ill-fated bridge of the Silvery Tay, I now must conclude my lay by telling the world fearlessly and without the least dismay that your central girders would not have given way, at least many sensible men do say. Well, welcome back to the podcast.
You gotta finish it.
At least many sensible men do say, had they been supported on each side with buttresses, at least many sensible men confesses, for the stronger we our houses do build, the less chance we have of being killed. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm Tom's severed, guillotined head, and that was The Tay Bridge Disaster, a terrible poem written in 1880 by Scottish poet William McGonagall.
So bad.
Widely regarded as one of the worst poems in history. And that brings us to our second segment for the night, dramatic readings of garbage writing.
What's the poem from The Hitchhiker's Guide? The something about the dead swans, the something swans lay in the stagnant pool. Every so often, bits fell off of them. They also smelt a great deal.
So at various breeds of literary convention, a longstanding game has been to find the worst pieces of writing one can find, and they're out there, and read them and see if you can make it through without laughing.
Yep.
You can't. Spoiler alert. So the Tay Bridge Disaster is one such thing. And the one we're going to be examining this evening is The Eye of Argon by Jim Theis. I guess you would pronounce
it
that.
It could be Tice. It could be Tice. I don't really know.
A fantasy epic written way back in the day by this fella, and frequently read at sci-fi conventions as a sort of gag. You try to read as far as you can without bursting out laughing. So we're going to see how we do on the air here. Johannes is going to start, and then I'm going to pick up when he is unable to continue. This is read exactly as it appears on the page.
So I'm going to real quick give you the official rules for a reading. How did I get here? I may have lost the... Oh, here it is. Other page. Here are the official rules for a reading of The Eye of Argon. Rule one, read it exactly as written. Use only the pronunciation that, or use only the punctuation that is there, no more, no less. Pronounce the words as spelled, not what you think was meant. Rule two, when you start laughing, you're done and must pass it to the next reader. Rule three, the next reader must start at the beginning of the sentence that cracked up the previous reader. If you begin laughing uncontrollably before you start, you must pass it on. Rule four, anyone who makes it through a full page is pronounced either a professional newsreader or over-rehearsed and must pass it on. Rule 5. No fair hurrying through without thinking about what you're reading. A proper dramatic reading is required. Acting out scenes is optional. Rule 6. If you act out scenes, no live steal. Not a problem here. Rule 7. No one should charge for the Eye of Argon. Getting reimbursed for the cost of making a fresh copy is okay. But since no one knows how to get royalty payments to the author, it isn't fair for anyone else to make money off of his work. That's called copyright infringement, and it is wrong. The writer of this page also goes on to mention that the most evil and sadistic use of the Eye of Argon that he knows of is to give it to a class of English students to copy edit.
Ouch.
Which just sounds delightful. So I'm going to get started here with the Eye of Argon. We'll see how far we get. The weather-beaten trail wound ahead into the dust-racked climes of the barren land which dominates large portions of the Norgolian Empire. Age-worn hoofprints, smothered by the sifting sands of time, shone dully against the dust-splattered crust of earth. The tireless sun cast its parching rays of incandescence from overhead, halfway through its daily revolution. Small rodents scampered about, occupying themselves in the daily accomplishments of their dismal lives. Dust sprayed over three heaving mounts in blinding clouds, while they bore the burdensome cargoes of their struggling overseers. "Prepare to embrace your creators and the Stygian haunts of hell, barbarian!" gasped the first soldier. "Only after you have kissed the fleeting steed of death, wretch," returned Grigner. A sweeping blade of flashing steel riveted from the massive barbarian's hide-enameled shield as his rippling right arm thrust forth, sending a steel-shod blade to the hilt into the soldier's vital organs. The disemboweled mercenary crumpled from his saddle and sank to the clouded sward.
Ahem.
It's so bad! You got this?
I think I got this. The disemboweled mercenary crumpled from his saddle and sank to the clouded sward, sprinkling the parched dust with crimson droplets of escaping life fluid. The enthused barbarian swiveled about, his shock of fiery red hair tossing robustly in the humid air currents as he faced the attack of the defeated soldier's fellow in arms. "Damn you, barbarian!" shrieked the soldier as he observed his comrade in death. A gleaming scimitar smote a heavy blow against the renegade's spiked helmet, bringing a heavy cloud over the Ecordian's misting brain. Shaking off the effects of the pounding blow to his head, Grigner brought down his scarlet-streaked edge against the soldier's crudely forged hauberk, clanging harmlessly to the left side of his opponent. The soldier's stead whinnied as if...
It's so bad! I would like to point out that... where did it go? Swiveled. The enthused barbarian swiveled about.
Oh,
is how it's written.
Oh, did I miss that?
My brain would have glazed over that as well. So that's as far as we were able to get. That was what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. A little less than 6.5 paragraphs into this book. This is terrible.
That's not good. But the guy was 16 when he wrote it, so we should probably cut him a little slack. Also, he's dead now.
That is true. So dead. So very, very dead.
So really, we were just...
Or he changed his name after faking his own death.
That could be.
He's still around.
So really, we're just mocking a child's work, the work of both a child and a dead man.
That's, I have no problem with this.
It seems real classy. Good times.
Well, that's Eye of Argon. I don't think we could possibly add anything to that. We just said we were going to do it on the air, and I'm so glad we did. That's Eye of Argon. I guess we'll be right back with another segment after this word from our sponsor.
You know what? I'm sick of all this foofaron tootlywinks going on with soup. They're putting all kinds of weird meats and colorful cheeses in, whipping it up with these elaborate machines. I read about one place where they go take a deep breath on top of a glacier, hold it all the way back to the restaurant, and then exhale it into your mouth just before you take your first spoonful of soup. Bunch of nonsense, if you ask me. And that's why I started Soup. At Soup, we just make soup. Nothing weird, Nothing strange, nothing that'll ionize your free radicals, just soup. Here's a happy customer now.
This is just water that's a little above room temperature.
And it's great. Just regular old soup in a regular old bowl with a regular spoon.
Actually, the spoon could be a bit bigger.
Shut your whore mouth, and then come on down to soup, where all we sell is regular old plain Jane, nothing weird about it, soup.
Welcome back from that weird interlude to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
Yep. And we're going to talk about a game we've worked on before and given up on in defeat and then recently come back to because it really wasn't all that bad. We were just very disheartened. Called Away Team.
We have very little stick-to-itiveness.
Not. I hate that word. I despise that word.
Oh. I wish I'd known that before.
It just reminds me. Have you ever had that teacher in like elementary school who was just like, I'm going to use made up words? It was always the same teacher who was like, hey, you said dude, that means the hair on an elephant's butt. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. There's literally no non-middle school teacher who thinks that is the case. I don't know who made it up, how it got to all the middle school teachers, but stop lying to your students. What is wrong with you? Additionally, stick-to-itiveness, not a word. Go to hell. That's how I feel about that word. How do you feel about that word?
Not particularly strongly. It's just some words.
Have better opinions, Tom.
No.
So Away Team.
Yeah.
No, I will not have better opinions.
My opinions will be and garbage, and you will like it. Away Team is a game we worked on before about... away teams from a spaceship going down to a facility like a space station or a surface facility of some sort. They beam down with a teleporter, and then we got sued by the people who own Star Trek a lot.
Because that is every episode of every series of Star Trek.
So the first problem we ran into with Away Team was trying to come up with a copyright neutral way of doing that exact concept. The second problem was that the version we came up with was garbage. It was a big man style game, so you had cards that you laid down to form the facility you were exploring, and then the kind of crux of the game was moving back in your crewmen back and forth between the station and the starship, and people on the starship could do some things to help you, like scan so that you were less likely to run into baddies and whatnot, or teleport and that kind of thing, and people in the station could actually explore it and complete objectives and whatnot. But it ran into a problem that another game we worked on called Ironclad did, which was that, and I'm going to put this as politely as I can, Johannes is a fool and can't keep track of more than like two things at once. And he's like, there's too many tokens on the board. I can't figure out what's going on. It's too many to move.
Ironclad ended up with us moving, what, 75? tokens on a given turn? It's
something like
okay,
that, yeah.
So the three of you move, and now... all of the monsters move. How many monsters are there? Maybe 100, but we don't have that many tokens. So it's just like 76.
Away Team wasn't quite that bad, but it had a lot of tokens to move.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah. Away Team is a classic example of our design problem, or our design process where...
which is may as well be the same thing.
Yeah.
Process, problem.
Right. Where I get... into the rules and I'm writing them and working on them, and then I forget that there is a world that exists outside of my head. And so like in my head, it's a totally reasonable thing to say, yeah, there will be six different types of aliens, each with a set of six different priorities that they could have for what actions they take, and it'll vary from game to game, and it'll vary based on this, this, and this, and it'll change, and then you'll just have to figure that out at the end of every turn what they do.
I wonder if that is more because of your broken addled brain or more because we grew up in the age of video games, and so I think in large part our game design process tends to come from what is a cool game concept? Games are computer games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make that game. Oh, we're making a board game. I guess there's no like personality-less robot processor to do all of the behind-the-scenes stuff for us. You actually have to move those pieces yourself.
Yeah.
One day, board games will come with little, like, nanobot-controlled tokens that move themselves. And that will be incredible until they take over the world. Which will also be incredible for different, more horrifying reasons.
I'm scared now.
Good.
So we redrafted Away Team recently, though. Tried to cut down on the raw number of tokens that would be moving. tried to cut down on the amount of data you had to keep track of, but tried to focus in on the core mechanic of moving resources back and forth between a ship board, which does one set of actions, and a facility board where you do a different set of actions. We also reduced it from a complex, you know, 2-4 player game to a, you're playing this with two people. It's for two people. You play it with two people. Stop trying to add a third.
And you never break eye contact and you have to hold hands.
Yes. That's how it works. Ooh, that could be a fun game.
It's a dexterity game.
Yeah, you've got to hold hands the whole time across the table from each other and complete some task.
You can't see him because this is a podcast, but he has both hands out as though the players are holding hands with both hands through the whole game. It is now a dexterity game where you have to move the pieces around with your mouth.
No, with your gripping hands.
With your held hands.
Yeah, you have to kind of make it work that way. Why can't you say him on the podcast?
Him? What did I say?
You said you can't say him because it's a podcast or something like that.
You can't see him.
See. Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense than what I thought.
You're a moron. I heard you say. You are literally the dumbest person I know.
Well, no, check it out, though.
You can't say him because it's a podcast, and the iron law of podcasts forbids the use of the word him, which I said in the statement saying that it was forbidden.
Well, yeah, that's why I was confused.
Can't say him. Whatever you do, don't say him. Him is the word that you must not say, and the word you cannot say is him. Podcast police are coming for me now.
No, I thought it was like a, you don't want to assume that the person I'm talking about is male, but I'm like,
just
everybody knows
that it's you.
Yeah, I thought that's what was confusing.
Boy, that is a husky woman he's been podcasting with all this time.
I have never been described as husky in my entire life. What the fuck are we talking about? This is the worst podcast on the internet.
I'm enjoying it.
Oh, my God.
Well, we're already sidetracked. I want to sidetrack us further because earlier on you were trying to figure out where your sentence was going and you went, did you ever play with Popoids?
No, I don't think so.
Popoids were like Kinects before there were Kinects, but they were these plastic, hollow plastic like tubes. Mm-hmm. And so they would scrunch down to like an inch long, but they were like an accordion, like a bendy straw, mm-hmm. but like an inch in diameter. And so you could extend them out to like maybe 5 or 6 inches long, or you could crunch them down mm-hmm. and they would bend. And they made that noise when you popped them out. They went like,
You know, I wonder if I did have some of those, but I just didn't know them by that name.
Yeah, probably. But I grew up with them as Popoids.
When you said, like, Kinects before there were Kinects, I thought you were going to start talking about Capsella.
I had those, too. Those were cool.
Those were pretty cool. They were, like, transparent and stuff.
Now that we're done buzz marketing products that probably haven't existed for over a decade.
I'm sure Kinects still exists.
They may, yeah. Actually, oh, man. So I super-duper want a 3D printer for a lot of things, but mostly for game prototyping mm-hmm. and also making – well, we won't go there. Other people are in the house.
Other people are in the house. It's fine. That's a problem. No, yeah. We're putting it on the internet.
That's fine.
They could.
They don't. No one listens to this. It's in the house. It's my wife and sister and father-in-law. They don't love me enough to listen to my podcast.
I don't even love you enough to listen to your podcast, and I'm your co-host.
I totally forget what it is. Oh no, 3D printing. One of the things you can 3D print, one of the many things, or several of the many things, I guess, is pieces that go between different, like, childhood building toys. People have these things out there. So it's like a Lego to Kinects or, like, Capsella to Lincoln Logs. Like,
that's
adapter
nuts.
Pieces that you can print and put. And so now you could have, like, your Lincoln Logs log cabin on top of a Lego base with, like, a Capsella windmill on a
that's
Kinect
crazy.
Space on top of that. It's bonkers.
That's really cool, though. We should get a 3D printer, though. How much are they now these days?
Build-it-yourself ones, like $300 to $400. Decent Monoprice has apparently a very highly reviewed one anyway, mm-hmm. for like 600, which is insane for what they're offering. And then everything after that is like
1,000
plus, or over. Yeah. But
someday.
One day.
The at Protospiel, the game, I remember the guy's name, whose name was Gary. He had it was the little spaceships on the three tiered.
It was Jerry.
Board. Is it Jerry?
Yeah, we did this before. You're like, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but it's Gerry. And I was like, that's Jerry.
Another Jerry. But anyway, his pieces were 3D printed and they were very nice.
Yeah, he had that cool like 3D ship game.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I didn't get to play it.
It sucks for you.
It does. It looked so cool. I was so distracted from other things by it the entire weekend. They were never running it when we were free to play. When I was free to play.
Yeah. I only managed to get one round in, but it was cool. I liked it.
All right.
And he was a very nice man.
And Canadian, right? Wasn't he
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he drove like 10 hours from Ottawa, he said, which is a long way to drive.
That's at least 10 hours.
Minimum. From Ottawa.
So away team is what we were talking about away 10 team, minutes ago.
We should 3D print the components for it.
Yep, the cards and tiles and everything. Mm-hmm. Just 3D print all of it.
So one of the things that really struck me in the redesign process for Away Team was kind of getting away from Big Man a little bit. Big Man, each card is part of the dungeon, but it also tracks like individual squares on the card. So mm-hmm. there's like, you know, it's a grid on the card and you move from square to square like it's a dungeon like that. I was kind of hung up on that when I made the first draft of Away Team. It made it a lot more cumbersome than it needed to be, whereas really all you need to track, or another way to do it, I guess I should say, is which card a given person is on and assume they'll occupy the optimal spot on it.
Right.
So rather than mark, if you've got, say, five hostile aliens on a card, rather than having to keep track of which individual square each one is on and how that impacts how they move about the card, you just say, there are five aliens in this segment of corridor. And they'll all do one thing on their turn as a group.
Yeah.
And that, we haven't been able to test yet because I haven't finished prototyping it, but that should make it a lot easier to track those middling to large numbers of tokens all at once and manipulate them, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hopeful.
But part of our problem on the heels of creating Big Man was that it was the first like really uniquely good idea that we've had. And mm-hmm. it I think, still stands up as pretty unique. I don't think anyone else has really done what we have done with Big Man. Mm-hmm. And we got really excited about that. And so the next two or three games that we tried to prototype after that, at the very least Ironclad and Away Team, were basically Big Man clones with slight tweaks. Mm-hmm. That meant, because we hadn't playtested Big Man all that much, taking a lot of the problems that we had with Big Man initially, like tracking movement of mm-hmm. NPCs across grids that could be, you know, 30, 40 squares away from a player, but relative to the player. And it was bad enough with one monster. Now we were trying to do it with like 30, 76, you know, whatever. So I think taking a break on those, coming back to Big Man, figuring out what's good and what's not so good about that, and really fine tuning it. Yeah, Protospiel was hugely helpful. Now we can come back to those games that weren't bad. We just weren't really ready to do what we needed to do with mm-hmm. them, and we can tweak them and make them work. And I think I think we could go back to Ironclad and give it another go. Mm-hmm. I think Away Team definitely had chops. I think it could go somewhere, and I'm excited to see it go somewhere because I love games with spaceships almost as much as I love games with dinosaurs.
What if we made a game with both dinosaurs and spaceships?
I would be so down with that. Did you see that episode of Doctor Who that was called Dinosaurs on a Spaceship?
I don't think
and
I did.
Had that thing that it is called. It was fantastic.
That does sound pretty good.
Yeah,
I was at the bookstore today and I saw a book called The Dinosaur Lords. There, I know, you're getting excited. And I read the jacket flap. It's a medieval fantasy, except there are dinosaurs in the world. And so, like, they've got, like, brachiosaurs and, like, armored T-Rexes they can ride.
That's
and
amazing.
Stuff. And, like, the guy on the cover, it's like a knight in full plate with a lance, but he's on, like, a Utah Raptor or something like that.
Nice. There's a game that I play on online called Dino D-Day that is vastly underappreciated. That is a, you know, the typical World War II shooter, and they did a pretty good job of that. It's a, you know, multiplayer online mm-hmm. team versus team World War II shooter, except there are dinosaurs. And, like, we sort of put a little bit of thought into this backstory as, like, the Nazis, because of course the Nazis are always toying with whatever thing they ought not be, cloned dinosaurs and now have dinosaur soldiers that they send out into the field. And mm-hmm. the allies are like, oh, we need to be able to fight back. And so they have a single dinosaur unit that they can use, where the Axis has like five or six to choose from. It's so good. It's so good. Dinosaurs, man. Put them in stuff. Put them in more stuff. Breakfast cereal, ice cream, books, ice cream books. I don't even know. So away team, we've been kind of hacking through the new rule book and trying to figure out, like, Tom sat down and pretty much crapped out an entire prototype rule book, and then I've gone through it. And
I didn't really know what happened. I woke up on the floor covered in drool and blood, and there was a rule book sitting next to me. So whoever I hurt in the process, sorry.
He's not sorry. So, and then I've gone through it and tried to tweak it, and we're, I think, have you started prototyping cards?
I'm working on the spreadsheet.
Are there tiles, I guess?
Yeah.
So you're balancing then. So we're excited to see this game.
Trying to get it balanced enough that we'll have a prototype that we can play with.
And it's called Away Team, and you do spaceship things.
Yeah.
And non-spaceship things, but having gotten there from a spaceship.
There's space involved.
And ships.
Yeah. And ships. The two things that are critical to Away Team are space and ship.
Oddly, not Away and Teams.
No,
which you would think, but you'd be wrong.
Really, you could probably play the whole game without. Actually, come to think of it, with the rules I've written, there might be scenarios where you don't have to go down to the facility, where you don't have to deploy an away team at all.
That's really strange.
It might be possible, depending on how the objectives come together.
Is that good or bad?
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
Well, because if you think about it, suppose all of the objectives concern
exploration.
Okay, well, concern like things like rescue this many civilians.
Oh, you can
run
the beam module or what you call it? Beam system?
The beam system. The
beam is an acronym.
The biologic energy amplification matrix, I think I called it.
I don't think it was amplification, but it's close.
Anyway, so like if all of the objectives were like rescue this many civilians or blow up this section of the facility.
Yeah.
You could do all that from space.
Yeah.
And maybe that might be the smart move sometimes. And that's exciting to me as a game designer.
Though confusing in a game called Away Team.
Yeah, but I don't think legally we can actually call it that.
Oh, is that actually a Star Trek term?
Well, they call them away teams.
Sure, and of course.
Even if it's not a copyrighted Star Trek term, I don't have a lawyer who can fight Paramount. Do you?
Sure. No. Do you know that apparently if anyone comes up with a device that adequately meets the like scanning ability for the time of a tricorder, they're allowed to use the word tricorder. Like Gene Roddenberry deliberately left that open with certain caveats so that it isn't copyrighted. Like it's copyrighted, but you can use it if you meet these criteria. Yeah,
that's cool.
So one day there may be a tricorder, and there should be.
Well, smartphones are
they're pretty close. They're,
yeah, they can do a lot.
Yeah.
Like, can't they take your blood pressure sometimes now?
I don't see how they would, but maybe. They can track your heart rate.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I can't tell the difference between
those
two things.
I mean, with what's the word for a thing that's extra?
Peripheral?
Yeah, that's the one. A, D, D, that's, with a peripheral they could, sure, if you had like a Bluetooth sphygmomanometer.
God bless you.
Thanks. So we're excited about Away Team, and if you have anything to add with the very vague, rambly information you've given us, somehow you are giving us information while we are recording a podcast we've given you, let us know. Or if you want to play test it, oh man.
Yeah.
Let us know.
That would give me some. That would light a fire under my bum to make me quicker.
If it literally lit a fire under his bum, I would like to see that. I just want to see Tom set on fire. Really, is what I'm saying here. So hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on iTunes or Stitcher or Facebook, where you have found us by searching, because I don't feel like looking up what the URL for our Facebook page is.
Or you can violate the prime directive, give advanced technology to a primitive species, let them, you know, kind of raise up through the years, revering you as their deity, and finally, once they've achieved interstellar flight, bring your message to us on your that the ship that they have.
After they've probably killed and overthrown you.
Probably, several times over.
Yeah.
But you could do that.
You could do that. So we'll look forward to those ships from space.
And we're excited.
Angry ships from space.
Hopefully they have dinosaurs on them.
That would be so cool.
All right.
So we'll see you next week.
Bye. Funding for the Mildly Alarming podcast has been provided in wampum by at least one of you. We appreciate the gesture, but can't actually use it to pay the bills. The same goes for the chest full of Weimar Republic banknotes, the one-pound bag of Confederate coins, and any of the many, many currencies sent in from the People's Republic of Carl. American dollars, people. American dollars.